Lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. It's a Thursday sports talk. It's time to get our view from the north. Last week when I had him on, I didn't have the music ready because I had no producer. I blame Nick. He's getting it done for NBC Sports Northwest online at NBCSports.com/Northwest. He's on TV. He's talking Ducks. He's talking ball. It's channel 737 on your Xfinity system here in Eugene. On Twitter, use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how are things?
Man, I got to tell you, I'm feeling pretty good about myself right now.
What'd you do right? Because this is a rarity.
I just had the best golf day of my life.
Whoa! Back on it. So for you, put that in relative terms, because we've talked a couple years ago, all of a sudden you had some time, you were getting out on the links, and you know, score wise everything's relative. So where'd you play? Where'd you play, so, and what has you so hooked again?
Well, Rock Creek, where I belong, and Bethany, over by Westview High School. So my previous best for nine holes was 46. I brought it, like, I cracked 50s finally, and then I got to 47, and then I got to 46. And so I shot a 45 today, and then I kept going after nine. Cause I wasn't going to play nine, quick nine, just, you know, middle of the day thing. I can get in nine holes in like an hour and 20 minutes. and I just kept going, and I finished with a 92. Now, my previous best for 18 holes was 107. So I broke that by 15 strokes. I had six pars. I was just on fire. I wanted to go play another 18 because I'm like, this may never happen again. This may never happen again.
Now, you understand, as somebody who's been playing golf for 45 years, this is a trick by the golf gods. They get
exactly.
They get you to think you're good, and now you're hooked. They got you.
But that's why I'm taking this time right now on your show exclusively to announce my retirement.
Hang it up out on top. I understand. Yeah, we got
it. It'll never get any better for me. This was it. I had six pars, dude. I had three in a row at one point. It was just ridiculous. I was like, what is going on today? So I know I'm due for like a $135 tomorrow if I went and played.
Oh, no. Next time you lose 11 balls, you hack a green, then they ban you from the course.
Exactly. But anyway, I'm going to take it for now.
All right. No, cool. Love it. So last time we talked, I forgot to mention a piece you had written on Marquise Blair, who we got to see in the Pac-12 at Utah. The beat writer who I talked to from the Salt Lake Trib just raved about him. And, you know, they were talking about he's an engaging young guy off the field, but in between the white lines, he'll just gut you like a fish. So you wrote a pretty compelling story when he was in high school. So he was not really gung-ho and kind of started off in a totally different position?
Yeah, so his high school coach, Coach Haas from Wooster, Ohio, said that when he took over the program, which was Blair's sophomore year, that Blair wasn't interested in playing football. He didn't like it as a freshman, and he thought he was a basketball star, which actually was a decent basketball player, but his football coach said he didn't have a jump shot. He thought he did, but he didn't. He was one of those checkers, right? But he knew, he'd heard that he was a pretty good athlete on the football field, so he went and talked to his mom, and they both tried to convince him to come out. So he did come out, but he didn't come out until school started. Well, we all know that, you know, high school doesn't have training camp, but preseason practices start before school begins. So he had missed the first 3 weeks. So the coach said, well, you got to play JV for 3 weeks to make up for those 3 weeks. So he did. First game, he actually played defensive end. Because he was only there like a few days before that first JV game. They didn't feel like they could teach him the safety position. So I said, well, just be in and just pass rush. He had seven sacks. And so he ended up coming up playing corner, ripped it up as a corner, and then got moved to safety the next year, but then asked if he can move closer to the action. So they had this hybrid safety linebacker position, put him there, and according to this high school coach, he just wrecked shop. Like, he was closer to the box. He could play man if he needed to on the slot because he was such a good athlete, had played corner the previous year. He was our best receiver. He had like 14 touchdowns, I think, as a senior, so he was a really good athlete. But when there was anything happening in the box in terms of run plays, he was just tearing people up, just destroying guys. So much so that he started getting recruited, but he had screwed up his grades as a freshman. So he couldn't qualify for a D1 school, so he went to a JC where he did the same thing, played the same way, was just crushing people. So Utah was out recruiting a linebacker, and they saw him on film and thought he was a true linebacker because he was playing sort of the same position, hybrid linebacker safety. So they went out to recruit him and met him, and they're like, well, wait a minute, you're like 185 pounds. Like, and the defensive coordinator for Utah, Morgan Scaly, he said that, you know, it just hadn't dawned on him that he was, might be that little because he just played so big on film because he was just such a heavy hitter. And so then they were like, well, we're not going to recruit you as a linebacker, but we want you anyway. We'll make you a safety. So they brought him to Utah as a safety, and he tore it up, and now he's a second-round pick to the Seattle Seahawks.
Well, as many people know, in the late 70s, the reason I didn't get recruited at USC for football and UCLA at basketball was my grades.
Oh, okay. That's why I'd heard, because you were going to be the next, you know,
two sports star
Walton combo.
I was going to look down my nose at Bo. you actually getting back to a real athlete, Marquise Blair. You got to speak to a lot of coaches and folks from his past. And this was interesting because Seattle in this draft, they, like you wrote, they had both their safeties returning in Thompson and Bradley McDougal. So what did Schneider and Pete Carroll have to say about what they saw? I mean, they picked him second. They had other needs.
Yeah, you know, they liked his physicality and his combination of speed. He's an athletic safety who hits. And you know, it's one of those things where usually if you have really good speed and cover ability, you usually play corner, but he's tall. He's 6'2", which isn't too tall, obviously, for corner. They like tall corners in Seattle anyway. But he's such a heavy hitter that he just brings it, that you want him more in a safety position so he can come up in the box if need be, et cetera, et cetera. So they feel like they got a very athletic and fast, heavy-hitting safety. Well, what else could you want? It's like, you know, I'm not saying he's Earl Thomas necessarily. Obviously, Earl Thomas was a top 15 pick, but he's athletic like that and a little bigger, but hits more like Cam Chancellor, but isn't quite as big as Cam Chancellor. You know, so like he has a little bit of the best of both worlds in that regard. Now, Tedrick Thompson was a fourth-round pick 2 years ago, ended up being a starter because Earl Thomas went down. Thompson obviously did a good job, but I can't say for sure whether they feel like he's the answer,
right?
You know what I mean, for the future. And then McDougal is, you know, the guy who was with the Rams, got released. They picked him up to bring in a veteran presence, and he ended up playing well. So I think they sort of feel like, okay, we got a fourth-round guy from a couple of years ago. He did a solid job. We got McDougal, who, you know, he's getting up there in age. I think he's like 28, 29 already. Is he the long-term answer? I don't think they feel like either one of those guys is a guy that they're going to re-sign to a long-term deal. I don't think both of them. So I think they feel like they needed to add a third safety because on the roster they really don't have a guy that you would say, okay, that guy is the next guy in line. Now they have two guys they like who could be the next guy in line. And if Ugo Amadi and Marquise Blair work out and you keep Thompson, then you got three really good young safeties, and if McDougal stays around, you have that veteran guy. So I think they just felt like they just needed to firm up that room a little bit.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to see what he does. Talk with Aaron Fendress, NBC Sports Northwest. Another story you wrote over the weekend was about the departure of Doug Baldwin. And like Rod Smith of the Broncos, you know, a really great undrafted receiver. But, man, that story, so you took your son to the practice facility. You're working. Your son's waiting on the bench. You come back and find out that your son Peyton had a pretty cool fan experience.
Yeah, so we went up to see the Mariners game, and along the way I stopped in Renton to just do a little reporting during training camp, and so he came up with me, and practice happened to be open so we could sit there and watch, and he got a little bit of better access because he was with me, because obviously I was going to stick him, you know, with people I didn't know. So he was with me right there on the field, in the field house, watching. He was just starstruck. Like, he's just like, oh my God, the Seahawks are like right there practicing in front of me. There's Russell Wilson, there's Ice Eagle. So he was just living it up. And then when it was done, he went and took a seat on this bench up against a wall while I did interviews. And he sitting there with his phone playing games, whatever he was doing. And so I get done with the main interviews, and I'm waiting for Jerron Brown to come for a one-on-one, and I go over to check on Peyton. He's 11 at the time, he's 12 now. And he's sitting there, just has this look on his face, like this shocked look on his face. I'm thinking, oh my God, what happened? So I go up to him, and I go, you okay? Is everything all right? He goes, yeah, Baldwin's just talked to me.
11 years old.
And I'm like, oh, really? What did he say? He goes, oh, he walked up to me and said, I'm Doug Baldwin. And I said, what'd you say? He goes, I said, I know. I go, what else? And he goes, oh, we just talked. He just chatted me up a little bit, asked who I was, what I was doing there. And I told him I was waiting for you, and we went to the Mariners game, and blah, blah, blah. I just had to like, talk for 3 or 4 minutes. He was like, just like, ah. And so we left, and we're in the car headed to the Mariners game. He's just still on cloud nine. He's like, I want a Doug Baldwin jersey.
Oh, man.
It was hilarious. But it was really, I mean, that was really nice of him, you know. I mean, he saw this little kid sitting on the bench all by himself. He just finished practicing. This is during the training camp when he was battling all sorts of injuries. And he took the time out to go, you know, chat up this little kid sitting there by himself. So that was very sweet of him to do that.
Yeah, you know, obviously he's a Stanford grad, not what you would call the typical jock that goes to college on his way to the NFL. But for those of us who followed his career closely, I mean, he's always been one of these high character guys, and you wrote about it. What could you tell us about his reputation, you know, and, you know, the kind of causes that that mean a lot to him?
Yeah, one of the main causes he's a champion for is criminal justice reform. He really... Like a lot of people have a problem with, you know, some of the sentencing guidelines that you know, clearly have a bigger impact on people of color in this country, in certain jurisdictions and things like that. And so he's out there sort of fighting that cause. And there's been some progress made in those areas over the years, and he's been involved with, you know, trying to sort of spearhead that. And he's just, you know, whenever he has a press conference, he's just so introspective, and he's just so he puts everything in perspective. He's really fun to just listen to him talk. He really, you know, he loves football, and he wants to win, and he believes in, you know, the whole team concept and doing your best and competing and stuff like that. But he's always making sure to say, you know what, it's just a football game at the end of the day. Like, he's like, my biggest concern is, you know, who we all are as men, who we all are as parents, as people, as you know, family men to not only our own kids and our wives, but to, you know, our parents, et cetera, et cetera. He's just he always tries to impart that kind of wisdom to the younger players and try and help them recognize that, yeah, this is fun, but at the end of the day, it's just football and it's going to end. And for him, it looks like it just ended. And he's a guy that I would imagine is going to go on and do some interesting things in his life.
So he doesn't give you the both teams play hard next question?
Not at all. I mean, like, he will break it down for you in footballese, but he always, you know, takes things to a different level. He's just a very interesting guy.
No, I love that guy. A few final thoughts for Aaron Fentress of NBC Sports Northwest. You know, I get it was not Stop the Press's news, but Chris Steele, a really high-level recruit who picked Florida over, like, LSU, Alabama, USC, and a few others. So he left the Gators, landed at Oregon, and you and I have talked about this before. It doesn't matter unless they win big on the field. But, man, it really seems like Cristobal and his staff have created, let's call it, a really attractive situation here.
Yeah, you know, it's trending in the right direction. Like, I feel like, you know, when Taggart left, it was a concern because Taggart had generated so much excitement and gotten, you know, top five class, number one, on one of the services. And so when he left, it was like, okay, so what happens now? And I think a lot of people were worried about that. And what happened now is that Cristobal has maintained that momentum. And it's turned out to be a very wise move to keep him around so far from a recruiting aspect. Again, I've said many times, we still have to wait to see him prove it on the football field in terms of winning. But They're definitely doing something right in the fact that not only are they getting more high level recruits on paper than Oregon's ever had, but they're attractive for transfers as well, looking for a place to land and maybe have a chance to go out on top. And you know, it's not that still the greatest free agent acquisition in the history of Oregon football was Vernon Adams. So, you know, people weren't doing – and Hegarty at center. I mean, they replaced Mariota and Hronas Grasso with Hegarty and Vernon Adams. So that's the top of the line for free agent acquisitions in football right now. It's still a long way to beat that. But the bottom line is that people want to be at Oregon, and that's what you want. Because let's face it, I mean, Eugene, no offense to Eugene, but Eugene is not necessarily a place where people are like, man, I want to go live in Eugene. If you live in other parts of the country, people haven't heard of Eugene. But if you want to go play at a major college university for a program that's rolling, that has unbelievable facilities and a lot of cachet, then you go to Eugene. And it's working out so far. We'll see if they can transition all that into a conference title.
All right. And lastly, you had the Blazers, who won Game 7 on the road. So dramatic. The big comeback. 48 hours later, you not only have to go back on the road, but face that team. You know, they hung in. Golden State pulled away in the fourth. So was that kind of a reality check, or a team off an emotional game that ran out of gas? So I guess, did Game 1 change what you thought about their chances a little or a lot or not at all?
Well, first of all, that Game 7 was impressive. And C.J. McCollum in the fourth quarter was just icy. That guy, not only, I mean, he was scoring in so many different ways. There was one soft off-the-backboard thing he hit that was just like, like, no matter what they did to him, he found a way to get his shot off at any angle possible while Denver went cold. It was just an impressive performance by him to just keep Denver at, like, keep them at six, keep them at eight, keep them at whatever it took, just keep them from being too close. So hats off to McCollum and what he did in that fourth quarter with Dame having a bad game. But, no, I did not give them much of a chance of beating the Warriors, even without Durant. I find it hilarious, and I swear, man, what I started seeing people going, oh, my God, the Warriors are in trouble without Durant. What are they going to do without Durant? I'm like, they won 73 games without Durant. They won a championship without Durant already. What are you people talking about? Durant made them unbeatable without him. They can still win the title. And then I'm seeing people saying that the Bucks are going to beat the Warriors, even maybe with Durant. What are these people smoking? There's no way anyone can beat this team four times in seven games. It's not going to happen. Even if Durant doesn't come back in the series, they're going to win it. They're just flat out better. Stephen Curry is just ridiculous. He doesn't miss. It's just, you know, the Blazers did a great thing getting this far, but I think it's going to end pretty quickly, probably five.
All right. Well, if you ask what they're smoking, it's not legal in Wisconsin yet, but it is legal out here. So,
but it's just hilarious. It's almost like people are just trying to have something to talk about. It's like, oh my goodness, they lost Durant. Oh, it's just driving bananas. They don't need Durant. That's the whole point of this whole thing.
I can sense it. And by the way, you mentioned McCollum. I'm happy you brought that up because, you know, I've been watching this game for a long time, man. That dude, I've started to say in the lane and is his domain, because he's, like you said, whether it's a pull-up, whether he goes glass, he shoots it off the wrong foot, high arc, fadeaway. I mean, I've never seen a guy with such a repertoire just for a guard in the lane like that. I mean, that was freaking magical.
He is definitely easily one of the best in the league at getting his shot. I mean, he has some deficiencies as an all-around player, clearly, but as a flat-out scorer, get your shot. He's just phenomenal because his handles are so sick. He can get just enough separation and then shoot it, you know, off balance. And he has a great shot chance of making it go in. So that performance was very impressive by him the other night.
Yeah, I was actually thinking of you and all the Bulls fans, because that money shot he hit where he's created separation from the guy on Torrey Craig, the Nuggets, you notice, mm-hmm. He was number three. You think about Jordan posterizing Byron Russell to win the 98 title. He was number three. So,
Craig Elo, was he number three?
Well, no, that was Byron Russell. You know what? If Elo is number three, I'm going to have to go play the lottery. All right. So, kudos on the golf game. And,
always you gotta go play sometime, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to come up
there.
You're
really good, though, right?
Let's not get crazy. I once upon a time was really good. Now at 58 years old, I've lost a lot of distance off my drive. We have to get Myers out there. He bombs the ball. All right.
Oh, does he?
Oh, yeah. Nice. This is a guy who will just swing. He's like a modern-day baseball player. He doesn't believe in moving runners along. He just swing for the downs. All right, folks,
nice. He
is Aaron Fentress on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. Enjoy the ball games, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, talk to you later.
Take it easy.